With UPS, future you graduates from Metro College with zero debt. How? As a package handler, you'll have a great job while you attend Metro College, and 100% of your tuition will be covered. Future you goes further than you imagine. Find out what you'll become at UPS.
We are ESPN Louisville, your home for the college football playoff, NFL, the Final Four, and best sports talk. Download the ESPN Louisville app today, delivered by UPS Jobs Kentucky. You're listening to the V-Show podcast. Listen to Bob Valvano weekdays noon to 3, only on ESPN 680, and online at ESPNLouisville.com.
Back here on the V-Show on ESPN 680-1057, it's a Which Wednesday and a We Want to Know Wednesday. Right now, I think the leader is the name's been dragged through the mud one. That was pretty good. It was Dr. Mud who took care of John Wilkes Booth. And so they said, your name is Mud. Not dragged through the mud. When your name is Mud, it was because you were being associated with him, that weasel took care of the man who shot the president. We're previewing each conference, a different conference each day. Yesterday we did the ACC with Andrea Adelson. Today we shift our attention to the SEC with SEC Network and ESPN's Peter Burns, who joins us right now. Peter, I hope everything's okay. We missed you yesterday. I hope it was nothing serious. So thanks for joining us.
No, it was all right. It was, you never know. When family moves into town, you know there's always going to be some kind of interesting parts of it. So, we live here in Charlotte. So, we got the whole family in from Baton Rouge. So there's always a little bit of craziness. But y'all were in good shape. Y'all had Andrea Adelson. Y'all are slumming it with me today. She's much more talented than me,
Stop now. Just stop that. She was good. She's one of our favorites. We're looking forward to speaking with you as well. Obviously, the SEC, the discussion always begins with Alabama and to a lesser degree, probably Georgia. But, I mean, this is, you're starting to wonder where in the pantheon of dynasties has Nick Saban put himself now? Is he in the same breath? Has he surpassed Bear Bryant? And is there any reason to believe that anybody else in the league is closing the gap on this team?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, right? And it's one that even Saban asked himself when he was there and first started at Alabama. I mean, I don't know if you saw the report a while back that they were looking at possibly, the University of Texas a couple of years ago had made a run at Saban after he won his first championship because he thought, hey, you know what? I'm never going to be able to do what the Bear did here in Tuscaloosa. So maybe it was a time to kind of move forward. But since then, he has. You know, he's answered the bell and he's brought everything that Alabama fans have wanted. Now the issue is the big change is who else can push him. And the last 2 years, you're talking about Georgia sitting there out of 120 minutes in the two times that they've played, Georgia actually led that game or was tied in 118 of the 120 minutes. So they can push him, and that even wasn't I would say Georgia's best team. I mean, I think this is the best team that Georgia Bulldogs have had since Kirby Smart has got there, and arguably maybe the best Georgia Bulldog team we've seen since, since 1980 or so.
I mean, if they emerge as the conference champions, I still don't know how much that's going to perceive. It's, if they are the champions and Alabama is the team right behind them or still has another big year, it looks like there's still a lot of work that has to be done before the general public, people like me who are casual fans, will think of anybody but Alabama as the dominant team in that league. I mean, how much does Georgia have or anybody have to do to change that perception?
Well, I mean, they've got to beat them. I mean, that's what it comes down to. It's just a matter of, hey, how are you going to win these games when the time comes down to it? And I think that's the same thing that not only that, Georgia's dealing with, it's LSU as well. I mean, a lot of people have talked about, what's going on with LSU's team and, they can't get over the hump. LSU, year in and year out, has a contender. And I would tell you this, I think they're a college football playoff contender this year in the SEC. The problem that they have is that they don't have a football problem. They have an Alabama problem. Mm. Alabama is just that good. And if you look at their roster this year, we were talking about it, the best wide receiver, just in the whole conference. You could argue that out of the top five wide receivers in this conference, Alabama has four of them. And now this is a conference that's pretty darn good. Alabama has the top four, arguably the top quarterback. And, oh, by the way, the defense never really rests under Nick Saban. It's just wash, rinse, and repeat no matter how many assistant coaches they go through year in and year out.
You know, we here in Louisville, they had a bad run of hiring assistants that didn't work out. So I'm intrigued that, I guess like the Patriots, that people always want to associate the Patriots and Alabama. They're so much seemingly the similar in the culture. One of them is they just keep plugging in assistants and they don't ever seem to miss a beat, and they're going to have a new play caller this year. I mean, is there any reason to think they will miss a beat? What do you make of the every year seemingly just going on with different people and not taking a step backwards?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's as impressive as anything, right? I mean, we talk about what Nick Saban has done, the fact that every single year, you know, he loses seven assistant coaches, two coordinators, and again, he's preseason number one. And, oh, by the way, he lost a bunch of players to the NFL draft. It's nuts. I think it's just a credit to what he's built over time to say, listen, I've built this thing into such a monster that it's self-sustaining, much like Belichick was. You remember Belichick and Saban coached together back in the day in the Cleveland Browns. So, you know, they're very similar in that aspect of, you know, how these two guys, you know, proceed to play or coach. And I would tell you this, the big difference this year is that I think over the last couple of years, Nick Saban had a bunch of young, hotshot coaches on his team because he saw Kirby Smart was starting to win a bunch of the 50-50 recruiting battles. Mm. And so what he did was instead of going with the coaches that were bought into, you know, our Alabama football that were just loyal to Saban, he brought in a bunch of really good recruiters, but guys that were willing to leave the next time the next best offer came about. And so I think this year between Steve Sarkisian and a guy named Pete Golding, who was over at UTSA running their defense, I think he has guys that say, you know what, I'm not here just because this is going to be great on my resume and I can go, you know, I can use this as a trampoline to the next job. They want to be here at Alabama, and I think that's what Nick really wants when it comes down to it, because that was the difference maker between, I think, Clemson and Alabama, is that the coaching staff was just more cohesive with Dabo Swinney than it was at down in Tuscaloosa this year.
Peter Burns with us helping preview the SEC. The folks around this part would want to know your thoughts on Kentucky. 10 wins, you know, among the best seasons, arguably maybe the best season the program's ever had. That's some tall cotton. You would expect they'll backstep a little bit. You don't lose, you know, guys like Snell and Allen and not be affected. But the fact of the matter is, there are a lot of parts back, and their quarterback is back, but they are going to expect more from him. How would you define success for this year's Kentucky team?
Yeah, I mean, arguably, I think this is so fascinating. Like, to me, Kentucky football is in a weird way more fascinating than Alabama is, because I just know kind of what to expect from Alabama year in and year out, right? Perennial top five, if not college football playoff contending team. This is a monster year for Mark Stoops, and my goodness, don't. You know, you got to make sure you're not within earshot of Mark Stoops when you say we expect the backslide, because he gets pissed off about that. it's funny because that's the natural inclination, right? It's like, okay, you had a great year. Look at all these guys. You don't have that recruiting base, and you know, you don't have those same NFL talent guys. However, not a lot of people were talking about Kentucky before last year, and they legitimately had a chance to make a run at the SEC East. So, you know, I mean, when I talked to Stoops at Media Days about it, you know, he told me, he goes, listen, I love that mentality. I hope people keep doubting us, because every time they do, it gives us a chip on the shoulder. And this is a situation where it feels like Kentucky has found a way to get by, you know, and play Louisville right at the right time because of the dip in that program. And it looks like he's gone into Louisville and grabbed a couple of big solid recruits, and to show that, hey, listen, this is not just a once in every 10-year deal or once in every 50-year deal in the case of the Wildcats. This is the new norm for football, and that's what got Wildcats fans pretty fired up about Coach Stoops.
I mean, I get it and I don't get it, and here's what I mean. Last year, when we were doing the local show this time of year, I'll be honest with you, the Kentucky fans were so blasé. They were so indifferent to the football season. They really were. They can just spin it differently now if they want to, but their expectations were not high. They, even when they won some games early, people were like, it was like being a Met fan. Okay, they're just setting me up to break my heart later on. So They, you know, but then they kept it going and they got to 10 wins. And yeah, that was a monster year. I understand what Coach Stoops is saying. He doesn't want to say, okay, well, now we'll just be happy again to go 6-6 and get to a bowl, which, by the way, some of the magazines, many of the magazines, that's about what they've got them projected at, is 6 wins or 7 wins. But my point is, right. I mean, they could be, if they were an 8-win team, let's say, that's a, you know, 8-4, you win 2/3 of your games in a league like the SEC. That's pretty special. And so if they do that, I think he could make his statement that, well, we're not about backsliding. We're about maintaining it. But it's kind of crazy, I think, even for as a coach, you got to be optimistic. But to think they're going to have another 10-win season is, to me, wildly optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. But again, is how do you change the culture, right? How do you change the culture of the fans? How do you change the culture of the players, of the recruits? And do you tell them, oh, well, hey, we had a great season. One of these years we're going to have another great year. Or do you say, hey, to hell with this, man. Like, this is the reason why Mitch Barnhart gave me contract extensions when I went 2-10, because he knew that I just needed a little bit of time to make this thing happen, and that's what he's done. So, again, I am a firm believer. Listen, it's really tough. It's like Duke or North Carolina. Kentucky is always going to be about basketball. There's no doubt about it. But that doesn't mean that they can't have success. And while I don't think it's a college football playoff contending team is the ceiling, I damn sure think the ceiling should be, you know, or the norm could be 8-9 wins, especially when they just put all the money into the new football facility. I mean, that's an impressive facility if you had a chance to go down there, and I think it's starting to show you that if you build it, they will come.
Yeah, and I think that's the message he's trying to get across, and I understand that. Talking to Peter Burns, one of your recent tweets was this. I'll ask you to elaborate on it. The only thing more puzzling than the wheel of eligibility that the NCAA spins when it comes to transfer waivers is the reluctance to actually explain the process to the media. Go ahead, elaborate on that.
Well, what I mean by that is I take a couple years ago, I had no really idea how the college football playoff selection committee worked, right? Like, you know, I mean, I'm thinking, all right, is it the best teams? Is it the most deserving? Whatever. And so to the credit, the college football playoff did a deal where they do these mock selection committees where they invite, you know, kind of quote-unquote thought leaders, and I guess they couldn't find anybody, so they invited me, and along with others, and we are part of that. You know, we go through the mock selection committee of what everybody else would do. And so I understood what happens a whole lot more in that room than I ever did before. Mm. And for me, I don't understand what happens with the NCAA committee when they decide, hey, these infractions, or, hey, this guy's allowed a waiver and this guy's not. And the NCAA, for a billion-dollar corporation, does, I think, a horrifically bad job of reaching out and explaining that to us average fans.
The cynic would say that's by design.
Well, the cynic would also say that's why that they're probably, you know, pigs get fat and hogs get slaughtered. I think for the longest time that they've been this, you know, pig that's gotten fat at the trough. And now with people talking about, well, there's billions of dollars, why don't you try to, you know, do more for the student athlete? Sooner or later, the student athletes are going to be like, hey, listen, you know, no one likes you. We don't like what's going on with this, with the way that how it's all set up in the NCAA. If you're not going to play ball with us, I'm a firm believer that sooner or later there's going to be a monster, you know, not boycott, but I think that there will be a lot of people that say, "Hey, I'm not playing this week." I think that's just a matter of time before there is that way in college football, that people just say, "Hey, you know what? 7 different players from different teams decide to sit out." And it becomes an issue because the NCAA doesn't be progressive and fix it.
I agree with you. Football had one foot out the door for about 40 years, Peter. I mean, they tolerate the NCAA. They don't really need them, to be honest with you, and they kind of know it. So we'll see where it goes from there. Hey, we got to run. We're excited. We're having an emergency broadcast system test coming up. You can't beat that for entertainment. So we got to step aside.
I'm the opening act for that. I'm glad.
Thanks, bud. Hopefully you'll come visit with us again. It was good to talk to you. Thanks so much.
You got it.
All right, Peter Burns, we enjoyed that, and we do have to step aside because at some point the sirens are going to go off, and what's going to happen exactly? We have sirens and bells and whistles, and I think it would be way cooler if they would just be a guy would open the front door and race through the hall screaming, you know, we're under attack! We're under attack! Dive under your desk! That's the most ridiculous thing we used to make.
It's actually a screen outside just with the little...
They used to make kids...
noisemakers.
I love Chef. May he rest in peace. Because remember when they would do the
Isaac Hayes?
Yeah. Stop, drop, and roll.
Yeah, right. Duck and cover. That is the biggest load of pig crap I've ever heard.
That's what us. They would tell us in a nuclear attack to get under the desk and put your rear end to the window. When you're eight, that doesn't scare the daylights out of you, for starters. And B, I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but I'm fairly certain that's not going to stop a nuclear attack. I don't know. Maybe I'm naive about that, but I think that's the case. Is it just going to come down? Here it is. We're ready.
It's coming down supposedly 220. So,
but if I get out
40 seconds,
yeah. But I mean, well, you're just gonna. It'll just go. Like I could be mid sentence.
It should go automatically, but I believe I know the coordinates to fire it.
You actually have to fire
it? I might.
Because I'd like it to come in, because it would have been great. I could have said, you know, Jason ended his show by saying he was going to tell us who he rooted for, and he never really did. But he called me today, and he said, it's okay, I can tell everybody who he was really a fan of. I would love to have timed it so that then I would have said it. He was a fan. I can tell everybody now with absolute certainty that Jason was a fan of...
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
More V-Show with Bob Valvano is now. Right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
It's done it again. Michael Conforto has left the building yet again. A three-run homer in the seventh inning, and the New York Metropolitans now have broken it open to a 7-2 lead against the Miami Marlins in New York. And if that can hold up, it would mean that at the end of this game, I don't want to misspeak, so let me double-check, but I believe... it would put the New York Metropolitans within one game of the wild card. I think that's right. I have to double check there. In the bottom of the eighth, Mets lead 7-2. Even their bullpen might be able to hang on to a five-run lead going into the ninth inning. So that would mean if they win this game, the New York Mets will be one game out of the wild card. They will have tied Milwaukee and... You do realize you just handed me some copy here. I have to find out if this is exactly what I'm supposed to read. Okay, it is. All right, good. But if the Mets win this game, they're hit by five going into the ninth inning. They will be 59-56, tied with Milwaukee, one game out of a wild card. That is absolutely amazing. This is a team that's had the best record in baseball since the All-Star break. They were the worst team in the National League with the exception of the Marlins. And as a caller texted earlier, you're right, before you get too giddy, the fact is they got series coming up against two of the teams that are ahead of them. The Atlanta Braves are going to win the division in all likelihood. And is it Washington or Philadelphia? One of the others are one of the two teams that are ahead of them in the wild card in their own division. So it's going to be very difficult, but it's amazing that they're in this case. And it's been so much fun to watch. And they got guys pounding the baseball now. Conforto and Peter Alonso have been – they actually have players that are fun to watch for the first damn time in, like, forever. Michael Conforto has hit let's see. I know Alonso's up to 37. So Alonso's got 37 home runs, and Conforto has 25. Alonso's got 37, Conforto's got 25. And between the two of them, they have 147 runs batted in. So it's been fun. So let's see if they can take it to the finish line and be a game out of the wild card. That's astounding to me. I mean, it really is. If things broke right for them, literally, that would mean their next game, if they win it, and all the teams that, you know, it'd be weird because there's three teams they're fighting. They'd all three of them have to lose. They could be the second wild card team by the end of the week. That's
crazy.
Yeah, that's nutty. You know what's not nutty is having fun with Draft. Fantasy football fans, listen up. You want to join the biggest NFL season-long tournament ever? Well, of course you would. If you love fantasy football, and we know you do, then you need to enter the $3.5 million Best Ball Championship on Draft. That's right, $3.5 million in real money. That is huge. It's season long, but there's no management. That's the cool thing about it. Once you're done drafting, that's it. No trades, no waiver wire. You don't even need to set your lineup. Your best players will automatically get started, and your team will get the best score that it can possibly every week, guaranteed automatically. That's kind of fun. Once you make your draft, just sit and watch. There's no salary caps. It's a real live snake draft, just like you play with friends in a season long league. But there's no better place to play than on Draft, where you can draft a team anytime you want. In fact, there's daily games going on all the time that I play frequently. It's a lot of fun. I won some, lost some, but it is a lot of fun. Leagues start every couple of minutes. You can join one right now by the end of this spot. Just do a draft and you could be a millionaire 16 weeks later. It doesn't get any easier than that. It's the highest rated fantasy app, and it's available for download at the App Store or Google Play, or you can go online at draft.com. And now, for a limited time, by the way, how'd you like to get a free entry into this best ball championship when you make your first deposit? But you've got to use my promo code VSHOW. That's right. You'll get a free shot at the $1 million just by using my promo code VSHOW when you make your first deposit on Draft. Just search Draft in the App Store or go to draft.com and come and play free with my promo code VSHOW, only from our friends at Draft. And I've got the app right there. I'm showing it to the microphone, but you can't see it. It's a lot of fun. In fact, you want to do that? We did that. We to show you how easy it is. Let's do it again. Yeah, let's do it again. Ready? Here's the draft. Let's get in a baseball draft. Want to? Because we'll do it for tonight. We will play. There's a three-person draft. They got two people in already. I'm going to be the third person in. All right, let's go. I'm the second pick. Tex-Mex is picking first. Let's see who he's going to pick here. Well, it starts in 50 seconds. So we've got the best listed players are Yelich, Betts, James Paxton, Xander Bogaerts, Aaron Judge. I don't know. The Red Sox guys scare me a little bit. They're having a funky year. He's going to take Yelich, I'm sure, but we'll see. But that's how fast it is. You've got to take one pitcher, two infielders, two outfielders, five players. The whole thing zips right by, and boom, off you go. By the way, they just did the Golden Tee for Ocho.
I was watching that. That was cool
because, I mean, that's definitely a skill. There's no question about that. And those guys, and one guy's got 2,700 hole-in-ones.
Holy cow.
He must own the machine. I mean, how many dollars did he put in that sucker? All right, here we go. Draft starts in 1 second. Let's go. Watch how simple this is. Tex-Mex is up first. He's on the clock. He's got 29 seconds to make his pick. Will he go with Yelich, who's the best player listed available? The computer's going to pick it for him. He did not. He took Rafael Devers, the third baseman for the Red Sox. I will take Yelich. Yelich is good at baseball. That's bad, though, because the Brewers win. The Mets are competing with them. I don't want to take a guy they're competing against. I'll take James Paxton, the Yankees pitcher, so I can root for them, because he's pitching against the Orioles. The Orioles struggle, so he needs to get me some points. All right. Now, the Red Sox, that's the guy's name. He should want to take a Red Sox player. He took Mookie Betts. Now he'll probably take Xander Bogaerts, too, I'll bet. No, he didn't. He took LeMahieu from the Yankees. How about that? All right, I'll take a Yankee. What the hell? Take Aaron Judge. All right, so now I've got Aaron Judge. And now Tex-Mex goes for his second pick. Christian Yelich still out there. He finally took him. All right, and he gets a second pick since it's a snake draft. I mean, that's how simple this is. We're basically 60% done already. What have we been doing this for? I looked at the clock. It was 2:31. We started 2:33. So it goes quick. And it's costing me all of $1 to play.
There you go.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Who do I want?
What are your choices?
Xander Bogaerts, Ketel Marte from Arizona, J.D. Martinez from the Red Sox, Andrew Benintendi. Always Red Sox are up there.
Benintendi, hey.
I don't want to take Bryce Harper because the Mets are competing with him, too. I'll take Manny Machado from San Diego.
That's a good one.
All right.
That's fine.
So I'll take him. So now I've only got two more players to pick. The Red Sox guy just took... He took Marte from Arizona. Well, I'm up again. Oh, he took Marte, and he also took Eduardo Rodriguez. He's got two Red Sox players. All right, I'm going to take...
Maybe a bit of a homer. Homer picks.
I'm taking Eduardo Escobar from Arizona.
We put the accent on it, so hopefully that'll...
He's taking on the left-hander that the Mets traded to the Phillies, Vargas. Hey, they're doing the school bus figure eights. That's not from here, is it? That's not here at in in Sportsdrome, is it?
No, they do that. That's if you're a neighborhood track, you do that. Everybody does that a little bit, I think.
Okay, well, let's see.
I'm not saying it's not cool. I'm just saying
Tex-Mex
that, like, everybody
took Joey Lucchesi from San Diego. I only have one more player to take, and it's got to be an outfielder. I'm coming up in 20 seconds to take that guy. So let's go see who he takes. The outfielder's lefter, Benintendi from the Red Sox. I should take them. I mean, he just took them. Figures.
Yeah.
Because I would like to have taken him, because the Red Sox aren't catching anybody. So I could have taken him. Can I take DH, J.D. Martinez? All right, I'll take him. That dude can hit. All right, so that's my team. My team is done. Here is my team. Is James Paxton will pitch against the Orioles. Eduardo Escobar and Manny Machado will be my infielders, one from Arizona and one from San Diego, respectively. And my outfielders, the DH counts as an outfielder, J.D. Martinez and Aaron Judge. I am projected right now. Ooh, it's a very close league. The one guy's projected to score 56.4 points. The other guy's 56.6, and I'm 55.6.
Wow.
That's one of the closest leagues I've ever been in, so we'll see. That should be
all
fun.
Right.
We'll keep an eye on that. That's that simple with draft, all you got to do. And remember, you can play for free if you enter my code VSHOW, make your first deposit, and you'll play for nothing. So good luck with that. Let's see.
I got a soundbite I want to get your thoughts on. It's
okay.
Kind of been one of the stories of the day. Story du jour. What's the soup of the day? The soup du jour?
Yeah, soup du
jour.
I'll
have one.
Okay.
No, it's a line from a movie. I think I butchered it. It was a scene in a shoehorn hockey, and be careful here, from Dumb and Dumber, when they're in the diner and then they throw salt at Seabass and piss him off. And Seabass is played by none other than Boston Bruin legend Cam Neely.
Oh.
How about that? You want to play a little We Want to Know Wednesday? Boom.
Here's one of these. Keep your thought. The Miami Dolphins mascot, did you see that? Snowflake was kidnapped. Is that right? Is this a joke? Stop. Was this because he was kidnapped before the 84 AFC Championship game by kicker Ray Finkel and ended up missing a crucial kick in the Super Bowl? The mascot was recovered in time. Did you know that?
Really?
This is the third time the guy said
that.
I know. That's why I was waving you to say, stop. I get it. But if you send me the same thing three times, I did eventually catch on.
That guy actually called it. And he said he was going to pass that
again?
Along.
Yeah,
he said, I couldn't remember the movie.
He wasn't the guy who did it the last time?
Oh, he wasn't? I don't know.
I don't know. You said he was going to pass it along as if he had never done it before. Because the first time it happened, I didn't know what the guy was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
You thought it was hilarious. So now,
because it took me a second. I was like, wait
this
a minute.
Is the
that
third
sounds,
time.
Oh my God, that's Ace so, Ventura.
Yes. This is my Marcus Maben. You got a son who plays in the NFL? Really?
That was awesome.
By the way, I mentioned that already. Yes, I did. Okay. Marcus is my conversation about the batting coach for the Yankees.
Yeah,
that
Cameron, tell
cool.
him to go out and attack it. Right?
Yeah, that was very cool. All right, anyway, finish your story that I interrupted you. Now you've lost your train of thought, right?
No, you haven't. No, that's cool. By the way, I told all the guys the timeout was over, so if they wanted to come back in, it's okay. You scared
I
them.
I didn't say that.
Well, I said
oh, I'm
it.
Serious. That's going to stop. You are so nice. I mean, anybody comes in, but I have a hangnail, and I just thought you guys are in communication. Maybe you could talk me through it. Sure, that's fine. Nick, we have no guests. I'm here by myself. Hello,
okay.
Nick.
Now, sometimes
five times by my count today.
We are
five.
Bittering. Sometimes we
five
are
times.
Bickering and bantering
five
back
times.
And forth. Me and the boys
five.
Are.
Five
but
times.
Other times, legitimate work is coming in. Calvin, for instance.
Yeah,
our
I dumped
intrepid,
on him. Well, I couldn't see who it was.
Engineer.
Well, I couldn't
he's
see
coming
it was.
In. That's the man that goes out to the tower. Not to the tower. On the tower. He's the one up 300 feet in the air in the wind trying to make sure that we stay on the air. He also was coming down here to make sure that the EAS test fired and we didn't get our asses sued off by the FCC. And you give a rat.
I couldn't see the reflection. I couldn't see who it was. But on top of it, you know what? Wait till a commercial break.
Then Calvin was like, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you dead. I'm like, Calvin, you're okay.
Of course. Dad's fault. Always take everybody's side.
Oh, my God. I don't always. We're not doing
always.
This. We're not doing this.
Always.
I am.
Always. You would have taken the Axis instead of me in the Second World War.
Not. I am Switzerland at worst.
Okay.
Jeez.
All right, well, you
can
finishing
go for some
this
Swiss
point?
Cheese. Swiss cheese on a nice witch sandwich. It is witch Wednesday. No, one of the stories of the day is the NCAA's new rule They released a memo to agents.
Yeah,
saying that a new certification required to represent players criteria is a bachelor's degree and also three consecutive years of, I guess, being an NBPA. I guess that's national basketball, whatever, a certification to be an agent, I guess. And a lot of people are upset, saying, including LeBron, saying that it's kind of targeted at one of the major NBA
Rich
agents
Paul.
And Rich Paul. And so they're deeming it the Rich Paul rule. Right. And ESPN analyst Ryan Clark, he was on ESPN's Get Up this morning, and he weighed in on it.
It's just a misguided rule, right? And it's another time the NCAA does something to me that hurts players more than hurting agents, more than hurting the NBA. Not giving these guys the opportunity to seek the type of advice or seek the type of representation that can help them through this process, regardless of a bachelor's degree, regardless of being part of the NBA or being confirmed by the NBA for 3 years. There's so many opportunities that kids are going to miss to be around good people who understand the game of basketball and winning in the game of basketball on and off the court, because the NCAA wants to quote unquote protect an athlete client. That's not what they are.
I'm of two minds of this. To me, it's the analogy I've given many times before that, you know, Nick, your car is a mess. The transmission is messed up. The
how do you know?
The exhaust pipe is broken, and you say, I'll get right on it. And you go out there and you fix the glove compartment. And you put a new radio antenna on, and you say, what the hell are you doing? You say, well, those things had to be done, but that's not what I was talking about. The NCAA does that a lot. They act with alarm because they read the tea leaves, and then ultimately what they do is, they do something that doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of the big picture, you know, like Dean Smith was talking about a long time ago, when they limited games, and they've gotten away from that now. But I'm just saying that was very typical of what they did was they limited games because they said it was too much of a demand on players. And he said, you know, if that's your rule, then you should say, forget about limiting games. You just have to limit how many days of class time you miss. That makes a lot of the big programs charter, and they're not missing class time. And he said, I can make that point now. If we wanted to, we could play fewer games and miss way more class time. I'll schedule all the road games in Hawaii, California, Alaska. I mean, it was being sarcastic, but his point was well taken. You're trying to accomplish one thing, and so you're administering something that isn't really addressing it. It sounds as if they are concerned that kids who are putting their name in the draft, and then if they want to come back to school, they should be getting good advice to do that. But somehow they're equating a college degree with that. I'm not entirely sure why. I'd like to know why. Their research say that they think that people, if they didn't go to college, they're going to try and push them to the NBA and make a bad decision. I don't know that that's a cause and effect. How would you know that? That doesn't seem like that would be, a logical leap there. So I understand what they're doing, but I also understand the concern of the people who are saying you are pushing an initiative that's not really addressing what the problem is. If you think they're getting bad, you know what? If you think they're getting bad advice, that's the way free enterprise works. It's like anything else. If there's two dry cleaners in town and one keeps giving your clothes back filthy and ripped, the other guy's going to put them out of business soon because people are going to talk and say, don't bring your clothes to Jablonski's, bring them to Schmaltzky's, because that's how it works. Well, it's the same thing with agents. If they're getting, like Rich Paul didn't go to college. I don't know. It certainly doesn't look like LeBron's got any complaints about the guy. So I guess their thought is, I don't know what their thought is. It's impossible to figure out what their thought is. The thought may be being, well, if these guys have college degrees, they'll respect an education more, and they'll be more inclined to send them back to school rather than give them bad advice to go in the NBA. But I think, like I said, the truth will, the water finds its own level, and the truth will come out that if guys are consistently giving players bad advice, people are going to talk, and they are going to, that guy's not going to have very many clients. So I don't know. It's just they sometimes I think the NCAA mistakes activity for achievement. They feel like I got to do something, so let's do something. And then you look at it and say, I really didn't do anything, but, it's, I don't know. Dana says, well, it's the same reason 85% of NBA players go broke, just getting advice from Uncle Anybody. Maybe. I mean, if that's what you're saying. But again, even if that's true, and I don't think that's true, by the way, but even if it were true, what the guy Ryan Clark's point is, that's not the NCAA's business. The NCAA is not in the business of protecting players once they become professionals. Their job is to look after them while they're still student athletes, is the term they throw at you every time you turn around. So I don't believe that that's true, but even if it were, that's not the NCAA's concern, I'm sorry to say. It's not. Their concern is to look after their own product, if you will, their own players in their own system. Once they go join the pros, if these guys are forking their money over to every Tom, Dick, and Harry, that's unfortunate and sad, but that's the NBA's problem, not theirs. I'm not trying to be cynical about it, but that's the truth. We're getting an update on that Finkel situation. Finkel didn't kidnap the Dolphin until the 90s. He missed the famous kick because Dan Marino held the ball with the laces in. See, that's the real story there. I didn't know that part of it. So that's right now.
I can't consider Marino one of the greats.
Right now, I still think your name is Mud is the leader. I did not know that, and we lived in that part of the. I actually did that little tour. I drove the road that he rode from Washington D.C. to suburban Maryland to go to the doctor. The Surratt House is still there. It's you can go see all that stuff. So anyway, that's my leader in the clubhouse for We Want to Know Wednesday.
Our boy Johnny Sales has a couple of he sends out the promotional calendar in this day in history.
Okay,
there's some decent ones here.
Sure,
let's see. I'll go right down here. A couple years ago, Ichiro 3000. Ichiro Suzuki becomes the 30th MLB player to record 3,000 hits on this day in 2016. Let's see here. He's always got a fun little caption. A juicy record. Barry Bonds passes Hank Aaron as MLB all-time home run leader, hitting home run number 756. Bonds remains outside baseball's Hall of Fame, though, as many of the home runs were hit while strongly suspected of steroid use. That was on this day in history in 2007. Let's see here. I'm just going down here. There we go. Short strike. 1985. August 7th, 1985. Let's see. There was a short baseball strike with new.
Well, you're right. These are really compelling. These are.
I'm doing a terrible job reading them. Sorry. Which was the one that I thought was really good? Oh, yeah, this was the one. Sorry, I couldn't find it. I really like this one. It's titled Say It, Don't Spray It, Ted. From 1956, August 7th, Boston Red Sox slugger Ted Williams is fined $5,000 for spitting at heckling Boston Red Sox fans for the third time in 3 weeks.
Yeah, he had a...
that was the one that I thought was really funny.
He had a very volatile relationship. Never tipped his cap to them. I don't think he even did on his last home run. They were waiting for him to do it, and he never would tip his cap to them.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know what the source of it was. He didn't think he was appreciated. I don't know what. I really would like to read it. I've never read a good bio on him. I think I'd like to do that. Hey, Bob. Nick, have you guys had anyone from the Bluegrass World Series on this year? If so, what day? I would like to go back and listen. Yeah, we didn't have anybody. How come he hasn't stepped up for us this year?
I don't know. Maybe I'm supposed to reach out to him.
I did know this. Green Eggs and Ham was written because of a bet. Bennett Cerf, who was the editor at Random House, bet Theodore Geisel that he couldn't write a book with 50 words or less, because he wrote Hop on Pop, and there were 256 words, and he really worked hard to do that. So he made him a bet that he couldn't do one in 50 words, and yet he did. But the reason it's called Green Eggs and Ham is because when you go to freshman orientation at Dartmouth, they color the eggs, scrambled eggs, green for the incoming freshman.
What about the ham?
And he was a Dartmouth grad. I don't think the ham is green in the book or at Dartmouth. It's just green eggs and ham, not green.
No. There is green ass
no,
ham. There
wrong.
Is green ham.
No, I don't think so.
100%.
It's green eggs
and ham,
comma, and ham. Not green, comma, eggs and ham. Green eggs and ham.
My, look at the photo. I'm almost positive. Yeah. This is going to be some Mandela effect stuff if I don't.
Making crap up again.
I don't
here.
Think I am. That is green. Oh, look at that. The ham is green. I want all the ham. That is some verde jamón. Inteligentes pantalones. Boom. Look at that.
Wow, that is green ham.
Oh, my. The greenest.
I stand corrected. But I don't believe the ham at Dartmouth was green. I think that would be just revolting.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one.
And if you notice, maybe it is, because look at the illustration. When he cuts the ham, the inside of the ham is normal looking.
Whoa, so wait maybe a minute.
See it right there?
Okay, that's only the top one, though. But if you look at the other one, it looks like it's green on the inside, too.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dang, the more I look at it, the more I'm not sure.
I can't imagine it was green eggs, a green ham at Dartmouth. I find that hard to believe. But I do know that was the source of it. Speaking of Ted Williams.
Go for some ham.
There was a great factoid about, there's a picture of the green eggs. If you go to YouTube, go to, the hell is it called, Google, and you type in green eggs and ham Dartmouth, you see a kid at freshman orientation, and look at those eggs. They are as green as can be.
See them? They are very green.
Yeah, but the ham is not.
No.
Let me find the Ted Williams one. It's good.
That kid looks like he's smart, too.
Well, he's at Dartmouth, I assume he is, unless he lied. It's possible.
Maybe he got an athletic scholarship.
He's on the rowing team?
Maybe. There's a girl that plays in the men's league here that played for the women's team. NCAA women's team up there in Dartmouth. She is so freaking fast.
Say it again. She's what?
She's really quick on the ice.
No. I was reading. I didn't hear what you said. She plays for the men's team here?
No, she plays in the men's league.
Like
like the top men's league, yeah.
Gotcha.
And then, yeah. She's very, very, very quick.
No, it was
a player too. Nice.
Here it is. Ted Williams had many baseball records, but he also holds the still standing gunnery test record as a World War II pilot. He was a very decorated pilot.
Oh, yeah,
he made two tours. He went back, which is amazing. He was one of those guys that just, he was an odd fellow for the people who knew him, but he was obviously a great hitter. He was as the texter reminds us, a war hero and very accomplished flying ace, for lack of a better word. He also became a world champion fisherman when he stopped playing.
Really?
Oh, yeah. He was a very big angler. Isn't that what they're called? Anglers?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
There was a really cool special. I think ESPN.
It's all over in Queens. The Mets have won it by a score of 7-2. And as we speak, they are one game out of the wild card. Steven Matz gets the win. They sweep the Marlins. They've won it by the score of 7-2. Michael Conforto with two home runs. Pete Alonso went yard as well. And the Mets have sailed to their seventh straight win. Is that six or seven? I don't remember. All I know is that they've won 11 of their last 12 games and have the best record in baseball since the All-Star break. Big stretch coming up here, though. Schedule gets tougher. Yep, they are. They did this live. They did a remake of The Jeffersons Live on ABC.
That was the thing they were doing over the summer.
And the woman's, what's her name, Jennifer
Hudson?
Yes, sang this live.
Oh, man.
Pretty good.
I like you some Jennifer Hudson.
Yeah, that was good. Mets are off tomorrow, and then a three-game set against the Nationals in Queens. Six straight wins now for the Mets. This is a big run for them. They go the Mets at Nationals at Mets, and then they go to Atlanta. And then maybe we should fly out to Kansas City and have a meeting with the corporate folks, because the Mets go to Kansas City after that. And then the Indians come in. So they've got.
Oh, we could say hi to Jason.
Yeah, they've got some tough games coming up. Look at the schedule becomes killer here. The listener is right about that. Their schedule going forward is three with the Nationals. Then they go three with the Braves. Then they go on the road, three with the Royals. The Royals aren't that good, but still, it's the road game there. Then the Indians, who are very good, come in for three games. And then the Braves come back in for three more. And then the Cubs come in for three more. So the next, from now until August 11th, from now until August the, when does that little stretch end? August 29th. They are going to be basically the rest of the month. This will find out if there's any chance at all. And I'll be honest, it's going to be a tall order. But hey, You got to believe, as Tug McGraw used to say, and they believe right now they can play with anybody. Are we? What's that for? A guest has been booked at 254?
Well, not for today.
Huh?
Not for today.
I would say we're pretty crappy. Hi, thanks for joining us. Got to go.
Would that be very... I feel like V-Show Radio and Avant-Garde Radio are very much... it's sort of like a Venn diagram, you know what
sure.
I mean? Like they're both kind of in, they overlap each other a little bit.
Yes.
How great would that be just to talk about the fleeting time that you have in your life if we have a guest on for 30 seconds? I think that could be kind of fun. But no, V-Show guest booked for tomorrow.
Okay.
On Thursday at 2:30, esteemed author and Washington Post contributor John Feinstein will join the V-Show because he wrote an article recently. I think it was actually today, talking about how the whole stick to sports mantra is effectively inhuman. So I feel like...
Say it again. I was listening in.
I'm not going to tell you. No.
John Feinstein's coming on to do what?
He's talking about scuba diving? He's talking about a story that he wrote.
Yeah, what did he write?
You can find out.
Well, because all of a sudden we get a whole bunch of We Want to Knows. There's a good Ted Williams bio on Netflix. Check it out. We Want to Know Wednesday. Andy Sweeney gave out a V-Show prize pack to someone on his show yesterday.
That was hilarious.
After the other caller gave up on the contest. What does that mean?
Well, I don't know exactly what happened, but I was listening on my way to work. Maybe that happened when I actually got out, went to work, and stopped listening. But they went to the phones. Andy hasn't gone to the phones in a while from the midday rush. So he said, all right, we'll go to the phones. And they went to the phones. And it was a guy who sounded like he was in a fishbowl. And you couldn't hear him at all. And he was like, that's perfect. Go to break. It was awesome.
So they gave him a prize for that?
No, I think they were doing, they might have done something later. But I don't know if that was related or not. But I do know that they were trying to give away a V-Show prize pack. By the way, we found some great bags in the back for some V-Show prize packs. We got to start giving them away because they're going to be dated very, very soon. But yeah, no, very good stuff there. Do we have a winner?
Yes, the mud.
I kind of like the clog guy from our man Bill. The only problem is...
I never saw that one.
Well, no, he emailed it to me. That's why.
No, he's not eligible. You can't make your own rules up. What the hell is this?
Oh,
that'd
Pat.
Be perfect. You'd honor him for all these people here. All play by the rules. Your guy says, not for me. Uh-huh. I'm gonna go right to his... In fact, I'll call him on his personal phone. That you're going to give the prize to. Does that strike you as fair?
There's a lot of ways you can get a hold of us.
We Want to Know Wednesday is texted at 437-9680. Those are the rules.
You could also hang up on the guy that's trying to play, like Patty Ice. Just trying to, you know.
Also not playing by the rules.
Just trying to get the party started a little bit. Cornflakes are used to give Butterfinger its crispy center crunch.
That's a good one. Candy bars are always good. Well, give it to who you want. I mean, because you're the...
No, I'm kind of with you. Of the ones that were texted in, the mud one was pretty solid.
There you go. All right, get out, because Cooper's here.
Oh, snap. I didn't realize it was 57.
Get out. It's time to get out. We have to get out. We're leaving. See you tomorrow, unless you know something I don't hear on the V-Show, ESPN Radio.